Welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.na. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and let's say thanks to Recess Duty for leading us in with their wonderful song, Beers of Alaska. We've got a great show for you this month. We'll be doing an extensive interview later in the show with State Senator Peter Michicki, the Senate Majority Leader and the sponsor of Senate Bill 76, which we've talked about in the past. We'll also have interviews recorded at the release of the Salteshi Trail Ale at Kenai River Brewing Company on Friday, December 1st. But right now, let's cover some other items in the news. As I first reported back in September, Alaska's Alcoholic Beverage Control Board is continuing its fight with craft distilleries over whether or not those businesses can serve mixed drinks in their tasting rooms. The ABC board wants to require these distilleries not to use any non-alcoholic mixers such as fruit juice or water, and to only serve their spirits neat. Alaska's distilleries are obviously resisting this highly restrictive interpretation of the law. In fact, the only supporters of this seem to be some bar owners who apparently view the distilleries as competitors and want the state to intervene. With the ABC board considering changes to distillery regulations that would prohibit distilleries from serving any garnishes and mixers with their product, the distilleries have recently joined efforts to encourage Alaskans to submit public comment against this proposal. Unfortunately, the public comment period closed at 4:30 p.m. yesterday. When the ABC board meets again in late January, it will be interesting to see how this proposal was received by the public. Alaska Brewing has its fan-favorite Baltic Porter back in its pilot series after a five-year hiatus. Baltic Porter is an expression of the inky darkness of the winter season in Alaska, a deep, dense beer with an intricate array of aromas and flavors. Quote, "We got asked about this beer all the time, and it's a great one for the winter and holiday season, with a lot of specialty malts, dark black cherries, and gourmet vanilla beans," said Alaskan head brewer Rob Day. "We've always brewed it to be something that people can drink right away, or if you're patient, it can be aged for several years," end quote. Aging allows it to develop rich new flavors, highlighting some of the notes while others mellow. First brewed in 2008 and again in 2009 and 2012, fans have aged every vintage of Alaskan Baltic Porter, enjoying this rare beer on special occasions and in vertical tastings. Smooth, deep maltiness abounds in every sip, with a rich mouthfeel and vanilla intensity and an undeniable warming coming from this 9.8% alcohol by volume porter. The jet black color comes from the deeply roasted malts, with hints of cherry and dried fruit, and notes of bourbon and toffee present from start to finish. Quote, "Baltic porters are known for their strong, flavorful characteristics. They were originally brewed stronger and more hoppy than many other beers to endure the trip to remote communities along the Baltic Sea," remarked Day. "This beer is intended to be robust with toasted French oak and dried fruit notes and a warmth that can be very welcome on a dark and cold winter nights even today," end quote. The name and label of Baltic Porter pay tribute to the Russian period of Alaska history, with the cupola of a Russian Orthodox church figured prominently. These traditional onion dome cupolas are still present in many communities in Alaska, as well as other settlements along the Baltic Sea. Douglas Vandegraaff has released a new edition of his popular book, A Guide to the Notorious Bars of Alaska. Here's what he had to say about it. The first edition of A Guide to Notorious Bars of Alaska was published 3 years ago and has sold out. The publishers asked me to revise it last summer, which I was very happy to do. The second edition has more old photos and advertisements, and most importantly, maps. I was allowed to add more content and given the time to do a thorough job of editing. This edition is more like what I envisioned when I originally wrote the book, end quote. His book is available for $18.95 in local bookstores and online. The Take Back Craft campaign, a tongue-in-cheek crowdfunding effort to raise $213 billion to buy Anheuser-Busch InBev, has come to a close. In the end, the campaign came up $212,996,154,250 short. However, almost 12,000 individuals pledged, and the campaign attracted the desired public attention for America's craft breweries. Tickets are now on sale for the 2018 Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival, taking place in Anchorage on Friday, January 19th, and Saturday, January 20th. I will have much more information on this festival and other events during Alaska Beer Week later in the show during the beer travel segment. On Friday, December 15th, Bear Paw River Brewing in Wasilla released its new Humdinger American IPA in six packs of 12-ounce cans. From December 10th through December 21st, Glacier Brewhouse in Anchorage held its annual 12 Days of Barley Wine event. This event is famous for offering three different strong barrel-aged brews on draft each day for 12 days. The date of the 2018 Frozen River Fest at Soldotna Creek Park has been announced. It will take place on Saturday, February 17th, so mark your calendars. Kenai Peninsula College will be offering its beer appreciation course, The Art and History of Brewing, again during the spring semester. It will be taught by yours truly. The class meets each Tuesday evening from 5:30 to 6:45 on the Soldotna campus, with the course beginning on January 16th. We'll learn about the history and styles of beer, sample a different beer in each class, and tour the local breweries. The class is worth one college credit. Call KPC at 262-0300 with any questions. That wraps it up for beer news. In our next segment, we'll have this month's feature presentation on beer and beer taxes. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. This month's feature segment is all about death and beer taxes. Ben Franklin famously said, "Nothing in this life is certain except death and taxes." And if there's one thing that politicians love to tax, it's alcohol. Historically, alcoholic beverages have been the mainstays of the American economy and one of the critical sources of revenue for the federal government, dating all the way back to 1791. During George Washington's first term as president, Congress passed the very first excise tax on a domestic product, a tax on distilled spirits. The failure of the ensuing Whiskey Rebellion, which President Washington put down at the head of 15,000 troops, established the principle of federal domestic taxation, something we live with today. Another rebellion also led to the first real beer tax in the United States. From the time of independence, American beer taxes were largely indirect, typically in the form of licensing fees and duties on malt and hops. That changed during the Civil War, or to give it the more accurate name I learned in school, the War Between the States. On July 1st, 1862, Congress authorized a tax of $1 per barrel of beer to pay for the war effort. By the early 20th century, fully a third of the federal government's annual income came from excise taxes on beer and spirits. Because of this, some of that era's beer barons, a nickname for men like Adolphus Busch and Frederick Pabst, were strong supporters of the 16th Amendment to create a national income tax. They believed that providing the federal government with an alternate source of revenue might result in excise taxes on their products being produced. Instead, it made the disaster that was national prohibition possible, since the federal government was no longer so dependent on revenues from the sale of alcohol. The 16th Amendment made prohibition happen, but the Great Depression provided a strong counterargument. While the hypocrisy and organized crime that was fostered by prohibition turned many Americans against it, what finally won repeal was the desire to create badly needed jobs in breweries and distilleries and to increase tax revenues that had slumped severely. Beer and the American economy, forever intertwined. Alaska, both as a territory and a state, also has a long history of taxing alcohol. I described last month how the very first public schools in the territory were built using the license fees from saloons and breweries. This enthusiasm for taxing alcohol continues right up to the present day. Alaska has some of the highest alcohol taxes of any state. For hard spirits, the current state excise tax is $12.80 per gallon, the second highest in the U.S. The national average is $4.45 per gallon. For wine, the current state excise tax is $2.50 per gallon, the highest in the U.S. The national average is $0.83 per gallon. The current state excise tax on beer is $1.07 per gallon, the second highest in the U.S. The national average is 28 cents per gallon. Under the current tax scheme, Alaska is already taking in almost $40 million a year in alcohol excise taxes. Let's be perfectly clear who's paying that $40 million a year. The producers, distributors, and retailers of beer, wine, and spirits have no choice but to pass this tax, just like any other tax, right along to the end consumer. You, me, and any other person in the state who wants to consume alcohol. With every glass of wine or pint of beer we drink, we get hit with the state taxes at three or four times the national average, in addition to the federal excise taxes and whatever sales or alcohol taxes our local government might have imposed. But wait, there's more. It seems there are plenty of folks out there who think we still aren't paying enough for taxes for the sin of consuming alcohol. As I reported last month, Anchorage Assembly Chair Dick Traney wants to enact a new 2% sales tax on alcohol bought from distributors in the municipality of Anchorage. Back in 2016, Governor Walker floated the idea of doubling, yes, doubling, Alaska's already sky-high state excise taxes on alcohol. Fortunately, that proposal went nowhere, but that doesn't mean it won't be back. I bring this up now because we're getting close to the start of another legislative session here in Alaska. Once again, the budget and possible new revenue sources look to be the main item on its agenda. The immortal Mark Twain said it best, "No man's life, liberty, or property are safe while the legislature is in session." This statement is doubly true these days in Alaska as our legislators try to deal with the fact that our state government can no longer live off the largesse of the oil industry. It would not surprise me at all to see someone again propose a hike to the state excise tax on alcohol as one way to rake in more money into the state coffers. Just like smokers, those of us who consume alcohol always seem to be an easy target for spending-addicted legislators looking for their newest tax fix. But we are already paying some of the highest alcohol taxes in the country and pumping over $40 million into the state coffers. Personally, I think that is more than our fair share. If you agree with me, then I'd suggest you pay very close attention to what our political leaders get up to in the next few months. While the state certainly needs to get its fiscal house in order, we consumers of alcohol have been doing our part for quite some time. Time for others to do the same. And speaking of those political leaders, in our next segment, we'll have an interview with State Senator Peter Michicki. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier with your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.